the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit. Oh.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I'm stir crazy, but other than that, doing okay.
You've been doing your walks, though, right?
Yeah, but it's a limited scenery.
I understand. I'm sure you miss your pancake house, right? I miss my
Absolutely. I miss my breakfast on the weekend.
Yeah, and I miss my trivia nights at the restaurants that I go to, so it kind of sucks, but first world problems. And we have someone from New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
All right. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, it's Dave here.
Dave, how's it going, man?
I'm okay. The voices in my head are too.
There you go. And we have a special guest tonight, sometimes co-host. Why don't you introduce yourself? And you're from where? Virginia, is it?
It is Virginia, and this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
It's going great.
Excellent. All right, so another episode of Dark Discussions for folks who are new to the podcast, who don't know who we are and just stumbled upon us. We are a podcast that discusses and critiques basically genre films, so horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, midnight movies, cult films, foreign films, and whatnot. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, and we will read your email on the podcast. So if you have anything to say about one of our episodes, a film that you stumbled upon that you want to let us know about, opinions of genre or horror films in general, or anything else, please email us and we will read it on the podcast. Also, we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. So just search for Dark Discussions Podcast and join us there, where we have a number of topics going on, and you can actually start your own topic of discussion. All sorts of things that are being discussed over there, including the Westworld TV show. There was stuff about fit people's feelings of the 2020 films, horror films so far this year, and things of that nature. So come and join us there.
Well, Eric, to be specific, somebody proclaimed what a wonderful year this has been and then got a lot of pushback over that.
No, it was pretty much 50-50 down the line.
Okay, when I checked in, there was pushback.
Yeah, there was a few. Like Jason Lloyd threw me under the bus, and Don and Ellie threw me under the bus. But some of the others.
Oh, that's because it's been a crap year.
But yeah, it's been a bad year.
Other people said it's pretty solid. So,
well, I mean, it again, we'll, you know, the debate what accounts for this year, but you know, following the usual rules, I mean, what I saw in theaters was decent. I think there was only one I didn't particularly care for, and that was Gretel and Hansel. And that wasn't god awful. That wasn't
Hansel.
Like that wasn't, you know, what do you call Hansel? That wasn't the gallows level.
Right.
Um, you know, I think Invisible Man was really good. I really liked The Hunt. I really liked Color Out of Space. You know, so those are fairly solid films. And I know
VFW, Swallow.
I mean, VFW was good. Swallow, again, I'd really have a hard time classifying that as a horror film, but that is definitely a good film. It's going to depend on what you've seen, because right now the problem is we don't have, that's one advantage that movies have always kind of had, is that they are a kind of a cultural connector. You know, people know what the big movies are, whether they've seen them or not, they've seen the ad campaigns. And now, without the big movies hitting theaters, now everyone's kind of stuck foraging through the films on various streaming services, and so nobody's all, you know, very few people are all watching the same thing.
Right. Well, that's true. Yep. So it's just more of a splintered audience. But also, a lot of the, I mean, it's still only March, right? I mean, usually by the end of the year.
Actually, it's April, it has been for a couple weeks now.
I'm stir crazy, just like you, Eric. I've lost.
But does the last 30 days actually count, Eric? That's my question.
It's just, I forget what month it was. God damn it!
We are recording on the 16th.
Yeah, right. So April 16th.
So if I remember correctly, I do, because the last time I was in a movie theater was Friday the 13th to see The Hunt.
Right,
that was the same day. That was the same day I got the phone call after school. I got the announcement saying that schools were closed until the end of the month, and then I got the phone call saying, hold your horses, the press jumped the gun, the schools are not closed, and then an hour later I got the phone call saying, wait a minute, the schools really are closed. And that would have been within, you know, a day or two of, like, the NBA and Broadway and NHL and MLB and all the rest of that stuff shutting down. So, yeah, it has just been a little over a month.
I was upset because I waited until midweek of the following week to go see The Hunt, and at that point, I realized that it was better not to go.
I don't know that anybody was going to be there.
I thought about that too, but who knows what was on the surfaces anywhere. I didn't want to take a chance at that point.
Well, I was already in quarantine mode back.
Yeah, Phil was freaking me out.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I was sending you 2.2 million people are going to die. I was sending you all that shit. It's February. And so when I was like in Invisible Man, which was like a week and a half before the Friday the 13th, I was drenching myself with antibacterial gel. I was like going crazy.
It's viral, not antibacterial.
Antibacterial doesn't do anything against viruses.
I know, but I needed the placebo.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, but either way, I was like, it was not good. I was going insane. So I worried Barrett weeks earlier than that. Yeah, sent him the Imperial London report and all this other stuff.
You would not stop. I was giving him a hard time, and then all of a sudden it got worse. So then I had to eat those words.
Just start talking about the Patriots signing Jameis Winston, and he'll forget about it.
Oh my god, dude! I remember talking about that with you. I was like saying this is the worst week ever because there's a chance that we're gonna sign him plus coronavirus.
What? You think,
anywho, didn't mean to get a top.
You think they can only cheat with Tom Brady on the team?
Well, no. Jameis Winston is a rapist mother bleeper, and I don't want him on my team. So to hell with him.
You just want. Good, clean cheaters on the team.
Jesus. I'm giving you a virtual high five, Mike.
Now, in fairness, again, I know nothing about football, so it's other than I know the ball isn't a ball. So, but it's fun to tease
on themselves.
All right, yeah. So I know, Phil. I know you. Since you just said a line from a song, I know you're missing your trivia night. So I have a piece of trivia for you. See if you can guess it.
Okay. What are we at?
Okay. Famous singer-songwriter Taylor Swift has a brother who is an actor. Can you name the first movie he'd appeared in?
I think I used to know that. I'm going to have to cheat and look. I don't remember offhand. IT.
Oh, I thought first it was this one.
No. 2016, IT, first film row. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't this one.
Oh, I thought this was his first one.
No.
All right, good job.
Yes.
Phil gets free wings.
You get a $20 bar tab. Yay.
All right. Well, what else was I say? Eric, we do have a website.
Yes, we do. You're still going to make me say it again, aren't you?
Yeah, what can they find there, and what is that?
God. All right.
You're good at it. We like hearing your voice.
www.darkdiscussions.com. On the right-hand side of the page, you can find links to Friends of the Podcast. You can check all those out. At the top of the page, you can find a link to our articles section of the site, where there are articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section where you can go find every single episode of this podcast, as well as any of the spinoff podcasts that have ever been recorded, available for free. There's bound to be something that interests you there, so check that out. And on the front center of the homepage, you'll find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to contribute to your online artists. If you want to help us support... Let me try that one again. If you want to support us and help offset the cost of producing this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them on a quarterly basis, and do an episode based on a topic chosen by one of our patrons. So, if you're interested in doing that, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Donuts.
And Phil, that's why you should take one I did better and put it in there.
You did quite well.
Please, donuts.
I do this every week when you could just take one and put it in there. Slave labor, goddamn it! I'm telling you.
Yeah, but then that's like the shitty Hanna-Barbera animation where they just use the same images over and over again.
I love Hanna-Barbera.
No, the animation quality though kind of sucks. And what was it? Filmation was another one, I think. All was that the one that did like He-Man? They just used the same three shots of He-Man every episode.
And Abe would know about this too. Anime too. They do that a lot as well.
They did. The older stuff especially.
Yeah.
A lot of the time I sat with Hanna-Barbera cartoons was the old Godzilla series they had.
Oh, the one with Godzuki?
Yeah, remember?
I remember that one.
Yeah.
I used to love the song for that.
Up from the depths, 30 stories high, breathe fire, he fans in the sky, Godzilla!
I just enjoy the thought of having a remote control Godzilla.
I know, Every fucking time you have problems, just call Godzilla and he'll solve it.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Just press your little button.
It'd be tempting though, right? You're in like the 10 aisle, items or less aisle, and someone in front of you with 12 items. You just like fuck this shit.
Now, for folks who are curious, we have two patrons to record. One is called Dig Two Graves, but at the moment it's not available for rental at most places, so we're waiting for that to pop up. And then we just picked another one a week or two ago, the Mothman Prophecies, so expect that both of those coming up soon enough. All right, so anything anybody wanted to discuss that is important besides the Godzilla Hanna-Barbera song?
Well, we did lose today actor Brian Dennehy, I think at age 81.
81, yeah.
Mm. Did he die from COVID or did he just die from being 81?
Old age, yeah. According to the article, who knows these days?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Cover up.
Joel M. Reed, the director of Blood Sucking Freaks, he passed away too today. For genre fans who know who he is. And then there's another woman, a woman that died of pancreatic cancer that was pretty big. If you read, though, it's not necessarily our genre, but she was a 70 books, and I guess she was huge. Donna Kaufman. Died age 60 of pancreatic cancer, best-selling romance novelist, among other genres. So 70 novels, bestsellers, and all that. Yeah, so all non-related to COVID-19, though, Mike. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's debatable. I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things, like how many people are not going to the hospital to get treatment, you know, because they had chest pains. So is it the virus that killed them? Is it things, you know, and it's going to be tough. It's that it such a tangled knot. They're dead. Yes, they are.
They have passed. Yep. All right. So anything else, Mike, did you want to bring up? Or?
I think that's about it. It's been kind of a slow news week, I believe.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about what we've watched and any other news that we wanted at the end, if we have time, depending on how long we discuss our topic tonight. And Eric, what is that topic tonight?
Tonight, we are talking about a 2020 movie available for digital rental, starring Taylor Swift's brother, called We Summon the Darkest.
Darkness.
That's what I said.
It sounded like Darkest.
Oh.
You just got out of work. You're excused.
Police came across another grisly murder scene last night.
Wait, I want to hear that.
The walls covered in satanic symbols.
Another gruesome ritualistic murder claimed the lives of six people last night following a heavy metal concert that local religious groups were protesting.
This is supposed to scare other people, not us.
So you ready for Soldiers of Satan?
Alright, let's go.
Here's to a night that we're going to remember for years to come.
Hear, hear.
My brothers and sisters, the evil that is heavy metal rock music is unwavering in its goal to corrupt our children's souls.
Girls, be careful now. There's a lot of evil out there.
You don't think we can fend for ourselves?
Boys! Do you want to have a threesome with us?
How many more children must die in Satan's name?
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
It is not too late. Join me in this fight. Incinerate these demons and send them back to hell.
Hey, I know you.
I'm the wrath of God.
Why are the police here?
Good riddance.
That's right. We Summon the Darkness. 2020. Well, it's technically it's 2019 through Fantastic Fest and various other.
We don't count that, and you know that.
Right. So it's a 2020 film released everywhere on Friday, this past week, Friday the 10th of April. Once again, today is April 16th, 2020, that we're recording this for those who care. The director of the film is Mark Myers. Mark Myers has done a couple of films. I know Eric has seen one of them, My Friend Dahmer, which I was going to see. But then Eric just said it was okay, nothing, you know, great or anything. So
no, it's a good movie, but it's not a horror movie.
Okay, yeah, and a lot of people thought
it
was going to be.
It's a drama.
Right, right. And then it was written by Alan Trezza, who wrote Burying the X, which got some play a couple of years ago, 2014.
It was a Joe Dante film, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you're right. It also stars one of the stars of this film here, which is Alexandra Daddario, who most folks know from various things. Other folks of note that star in this film is Maddie Hassan, and then Amy Forsyth, three female leads, and then three male leads are Kenan Johnson, then also Logan Miller, who a lot of people know him from Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, as well as Escape Room, and then Austin Swift, who actually co-produced this film and starred in it as well, as Eric said, the younger brother of Taylor Swift by 2 years, the greatest singer in the history of the world. His sister is one of the greatest songwriters of all time. Yes. Yes, I'm a big Taylor Swift fan for folks who
wait,
don't.
Wait, what?
Oh my God!
We never would have known.
I had no idea. Me and Abe
certainly
went down.
Not the reason you chose this movie with her brother in it.
No, that is true. That's true. But when me and Abe drove 2 hours to Mystic, Connecticut, for the Dark Discussions podcast meetup last year. Yes. It was all Taylor Swift the entire way down and back.
Oh, God.
The 4 hours.
I feel
Taylor
sorry
Swift.
For him.
Four hours.
It was hell. It was fucking hell.
It sounds like torture. When
me and Anthony Thurber of Anthony T's Horror Show went down to Skizik here, so that's a 14-hour drive or whatever. I only did a total of 4 hours of Taylor Swift with him. We mixed in other stuff as well.
Bill, the Cenobites would love you.
the film.
We have such songs to play for you.
Is he like that DVD or CD monster in the third one? I think it is.
I actually used iTunes the entire time. So. So this film here is getting 68% good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. So generally liked by critics. It had a higher review from the festival circuit, but like a lot of films that get great reviews in the festival circuit, when it gets generally released, they sometimes lower just for the fact that non-horror fans also review films. The film's being reviewed by pretty much everybody, so it's not a small profile film. And of course, the film is getting a lot of traction because Taylor Swift, with her 10 million followers on Instagram and Twitter and whatever, she's obviously pumping it up. And so
free marketing campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure she's only promoting it on the merits.
Indeed. Also, other people in the film that of note are Allison McAtee, who plays the stepmom, who oddly is actually the same age as Alexandra Daddario. And then Johnny Knoxville has a small role as well. So that's pretty much it. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I'll start because I was the one that first noticed it, and it wasn't because of Taylor Swift. No, what happened was I went on to iTunes and looked at the top 44 horror films of the week, and that was on Thursday night. And this was on one of the top 44, and it had really good reviews. At that time, it was at 80-something percent, and because it was like the day before it was going to be released or something. And then also, it had rock and roll related to it, so it seemed pretty cool. And then, I suggested it, and we decided to do it. I watched it. I actually bought it because Eric mentioned that if you pay $3 more, you get the audio commentary and all this other stuff too. So it was only $9.99 to buy versus $6.99 to rent. So I bought it and I watched it. I think it was Saturday night. I think. Oh, was it Tuesday? I think it may have been Tuesday night.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But either way, I went in pretty much blind. That film said 90 minutes, but it really was 1 hour and 25, not including credits. And I give this film a huge thumbs up. This was a blast. It was fun, similar to Satanic Panic or Ready or Not. This one tried to be, I guess, more towards the serious side, like Ready or Not was, with little humor in it. But all in all, it's the same idea of those two films. And it was really good. They did an interesting twist, though I kind of figured it out. But the twist was good because it changes up what is otherwise a genre, subgenre that's already been done a number of times. But it's a real fun film. During the coronavirus times, it was a good, nice, funny film kind of to watch during this time. So I love this film. This is one of my favorite films of the year so far. Let's go with you, Eric.
Well, I heard about this movie because Phil wanted to do it. I don't know. I'm not going to say this is a horrible movie.
But something about it just didn't grab me. I wasn't into it. I can't point to any one single thing and say that was horrible, because it wasn't. But like, I didn't find it to be particularly scary. I didn't find it to be particularly funny. There was one moment in the movie where I laughed out loud when somebody got a cookie sheet slammed in their face. That cracked me up. But other than that, I found it to be pretty meh. So I probably won't end up watching it again. It exists, and I'm going to move on with my life.
All right, very good. Barrett.
I heard about the movie because you said that I could guest host tonight. So I watched it. I didn't have, I had just a little bit of time to get it and watch it. I don't feel as strongly as you felt about it. I kind of feel closer to what Eric felt. It didn't quite grab me enough. I do like the twist. But other than that, it just wasn't as great as I expected. Not best movie ever.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, I would say I'm about where Eric is, plus maybe 10 to 20%. I thought it was a mediocre film, not a bad film, not a great film. I was not bored while watching it. I was definitely entertained, but not, lift my heart entertained, just not resenting the fact that I was watching it entertained. I thought it was competent, but not excellent. I found it oddly predictable, given that a lot of it's intended to set something up. I kind of figured they were going with something, and I was watching it with my wife, and she seemed to feel about the same way, but I called the big twist a while before it happened. So, and I'd had real issues with the very end of the film, and how it wraps up or resolves, just logistically structured, but we'll talk about that. But if you can't go to the theater to watch a movie, if you're looking for something to watch, this is not a horrible one to do.
All right. Well, Abe.
So I knew about this film because it was one of the choices for a topic. We decided this week we'd be looking at it and discussing it. I watched it and finished it just 10 minutes before we started the episode, just to keep everything fresh. And I'm mixed on the film. I think it's, for the most part, well acted. I think you can definitely tell that Dario and Hayeson were just loving every moment they could just chew up the scenery. They're having a blast with it. There were definitely some funny moments. And it wasn't boring, but it wasn't anything that was going to really stay with me. It's not a bad movie. There wasn't anything that I thought was low quality. I think the ending was a little weak. Nothing that would really stay with you or felt complete. I felt that it was just trying to I don't know. It felt kind of rushed at the end because everything else was so, a mix in terms of the writing and stuff like that. It was well paced to getting up to the reveal, which I had a feeling they would try to do something very different. I wasn't completely sure they were going to go that way, but after a certain point, after 30 minutes in, I started thinking it has to be what my guess is. I had two possible possibilities, and one of them turned out to be that. But it you could honestly do worse. It's another throwback film to the 80s and stuff like that, and there's certain but a lot of them, and in that kind of subgenre that honestly hasn't seemed to be going away anytime soon. There's a lot of choices if you want to check it out. And see what's the craze about when all these filmmakers are setting films in this era. But honestly, it's not bad. And if you're still stuck in the house, it's a good time killer. So yeah.
All right, very well. So one huge thumbs up, and then four okay. So, Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Wiki. All right. Three best friends embark on a road trip to a heavy metal show where they bond with three aspiring musicians and head off to one of the girls' country home for an after party.
That's all it says?
That's it?
Wow. Well, kidding.
Honestly, that's perfect. It's totally on point.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, if they had given out any sort of any more information, it would
spoil it.
Yeah, I mean, because it is, you know, 30 minutes of setup and then the twist.
Right. Well, I think I would have put another sentence in without spoiling it, but like saying, then something unexpectedly bad happens or something. I mean, because what that wiki IMDb makes it sound like it could be a teen romance.
Yeah, rom-com.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't say anything. Interesting. All right. Well enough. Fair enough. All right. So before we get into spoilers and all that, I guess we can discuss, you know, general things and such. I'm right there with you, Abe, on Alexandra Daddario and Maddie Hassan. I mean, those two really, you could tell, were having a blast with the film in their role. Generally, even after the twist, but especially before the twist, I liked all the characters really well. None of them really bothered me. I actually enjoyed being virtual company with all of them, and I liked how the characters were written.
No, which actress was which character? Because I didn't.
So
Maddie Hassan's the blonde.
Maddie Hassan's the Madonna wannabe.
Yeah, the one with the blonde hair. Alexandra Daddario is the one that owns the house, and then
okay, so that's
Amy,
Alexis.
Yeah, and Val is the, I guess what you said, the Madonna one, and then Beverly was the newbie to the group.
Right. Okay. That was Bev.
Beverly. Yeah, Bev. Exactly. Yep.
One random fact: Maddie Hassan is in a television show from a while ago called The Finder that I really loved, but only lasted half a season.
Oh, really? Was she one of the stars in it?
Yeah.
Okay. She was probably the biggest find I felt out of all the people in this film, because I had never seen her ever before, and I felt she stole the film. I thought her character was great. She had a running gag throughout the film. She
bladder
was
problem.
Kind of, yeah, bladder problems. She had a funny attitude, was kind of a little crazy, but not really. It was more, I don't know how to explain it, but I just liked her character a lot, and I hope to see her in a lot of films in the future, because she was really good, I felt. But generally, all of them were really good. I mean, all the actors were good. I kind of liked all the actors. Now, Mike, what about you? What did you think of any of these characters? Do you like the characters?
I like the characters. I thought they were... I think that the characters as written, there wasn't a whole lot to them. I think the actresses brought a lot to the roles. I think they may have gone to the PP well a few times too many. Because she doesn't have a weak bladder, she has a bladder problem.
You've never been on a road trip with me.
I mean, well, and then, I mean, the one thing I did laugh at, and I guess I'm kind of glad they didn't put a button on it, was that, you know, she gets done talking about how they need to stop at the gas station because she needs to use a restroom because she has a tiny bladder. And they're complaining that they just stopped, you know, an hour or two ago. And then she comes out of the gas station with a big gulp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I know if we had rewound the clock to when I was 18 or however old these actresses are supposed to be, the characters are. And I had been stopping repeatedly for a friend of mine who had, you know, complained about having a weak bladder. And he came back with a big gulp. I'm throwing it out the window.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
That's not a complaint, just a comment. I thought it was, I'm just curious if that was intended to be.
I think it was. I think it was intended.
It kind of has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see.
I'll say that I actually enjoyed the beginning of the movie where they were going to the concert, because that brought back some memories.
Yeah.
That kind of hit the nostalgia button for me.
Yeah, same here, Eric. Same here. Like I said, I was like virtually in the car with them as they were heading to the concert. I was virtually with them when they were talking to the people and hanging out in the parking lot. So all that stuff.
Talking about their first shows and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All that.
That was just neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine, Phil, it's been a while since you've been in a car with that many people and there was not a car seat involved.
That is true. That is true. Actually,
you may have also had the PP problems.
Come on, Mike. Abe doesn't need a car seat.
Yep. We got the portable potty for the kids. There's no doubt. Yep. Pull over on the side of the road and all that. Yep. A 4-year-old and 6-year-old. What are you gonna do? I love that when they were talking about all that stuff. First concerts and the film takes place in 1988, so it's a period piece film, and that was when the year I graduated from high school, and probably you, Mike, as well.
Yep.
And I think maybe you too, Barrett, right? Or you were 89.
I'm 87, actually.
So you're a year older. Yeah, so it was generally and Eric was like 80. No, you were
91.
Like 91. Yeah, anyone. Yeah. So for us, just not including Abe, because Abe wasn't born yet, probably, or just in diapers.
I wasn't even a thought yet.
Yeah, so you weren't even born yet. That's terrible. Oh my
he
God.
Was in balls.
At least I still have my hair.
Oh, that's just mean.
I don't care about bald jokes. Only superficial people care about hair.
All right. So, I because of the conversation they were talking about and the things they had, they had like Jolts over there, and they're talking about all the big bands of that time, which were
awesome.
Like the Scorpions. Yeah, they were pretty solid stuff. I felt like I was there. That was years ago, but it seems like yesterday, Eric.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I do believe in
then
you.
You're old.
Yeah, and you don't that whole. I listened to the director's commentary last night, and during that scene, director's commentary, they're talking about Judas Priest because there was a Judas Priest concert documentary that took place in the parking lot. And that's where they got the idea to do that scene is they stole it right from that documentary. And they said we wanted to do just like that and have it like out in the parking lot with all the people and whatnot. That was kind of cool. I haven't seen that documentary. I'm sure you have though, right, Eric?
I don't remember details, but I have seen it.
Sure. So that really, that's the first 20 minutes anyway, right? The first 20 minutes is then
at least, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at least a half an hour of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. Abe or Barrett, either you want to go into how it takes place, basically.
It's basically during the satanic panic, where they start hearing this huge number of, ritualistic killings going on. And I think this one of its nice strengths is how the film is kind of giving a sense of a looming threat. It has the characters kind of just seem for the most part very normally, just young people going to a concert and having fun, and for the most part, it feels like a typical setup to a traditional slasher. And I think this is one of the tricks that the director tries to use to kind of play around with the genre, because you got a bunch young men and women go and get drunk. They choose a house that no one's at. And, you know, and if it had been that era or some time back, you know, just some guy in a mask or some crazy people would actually show up and start chasing them around. But that's not what happens. It takes a very different direction. And I was curious to know how everybody felt about how they sprinkle around the little hints.
I like that. I thought that was one of the strongest things about the movie, the little hints that they do all the way through. Some of the conversations they have and how some of the different actors act in those conversations kind of give you little clues all along. But they're not,
I didn't
subtle.
Think the clues were little.
You didn't? Oh, okay. No.
Like I think everybody on here had, like, predicted what was coming.
Well, I figured there were three options. Because, you know, they do sort of the background setting of the serial killers or cult killers, whatever, on the news, and they, you know, and of course they make sure that you see when they're in the store, you see the footage of the preacher. So you know he's going to come in at some point, and so
right.
of course, I don't know if people still think this is edgy or countercultural, but it is kind of cliched at this point to make the hypocritical Christians be your killers. So you knew he was going to come in; he was going to be the Jim Jones bad preacher type, or Charlie Manson, or what have you.
By the way, spoiler alert!
Oh yeah, spoiler alert. Well, that's what I'm saying. I kind of knew that was. Anyway, what?
Yeah,
you had three options. So you had three options. Option one, they'll be the cult killers will show up while they're in the house. Option two, the girls are the killers. Option three, the boys are the killers. Right?
Well, right. And there was a line in when they stopped at the gas station that I just thought was a dead giveaway.
Oh, and what was that?
Yeah.
I think one of the girls was either listening to the TV or reading a paper. And acting anxious, and what's her face? Dario walked up to her and goes, "This is supposed to scare other people, not us."
Ah,
I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, right, yeah, but you know what? You think it's because, you know, they're counter culture. You know, back in the 1988, the people that not all of us, but a lot of them were looked at as, like, you know, punks, heavy metals, burnouts, freaks, whatever you want to call it. So they're trying to say to hell with. I felt that it was like she was just saying, oh, the heck with those Bible thumpers, you know, we're doing nothing
right.
wrong.
No,
right.
I thought they tipped their hand right there.
Well, I think it was because they're you know, all, you know, dressed up in the very stereotypical
goth, pre-goth.
Goth, metalhead, whatever. Yeah. Gear sort of. Now, while I was never in that particular
group, goth and metalhead are completely different. Metalheads listen to good music.
That's yeah, but
you also oh still, man, oh,
wow.
But wrong. Stylistically, sometimes you get similar choices. But you know, like I said, I wasn't in that group, but I was a D&D nerd, so I remember when there was the sub Satanic Panic with Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh yeah.
So I kind of saw it the same way, is that this is something that's being used to scare the normies that, you know, those of us who are on the inside know this is total bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm,
right. So that's how I kind of looked at it. To me, that wasn't a giveaway.
Same. I didn't feel it was a giveaway either. Obviously, though, Eric was more astute than us.
There was nice little extra hints, like when Ivan asked Alexis what was her first concert.
Yeah,
right.
She can't even think of it off the top of her head, and she needed Bev to kind of help her.
Right, and then she didn't know who Randy Rhoads was, and that he died in an airplane crash.
That one was she. What, he left the band?
And she's supposed to be a metalhead, and she
right.
didn't know that in 1988, when everybody knew that.
Yeah.
I just took it, yeah, that she was kind of a poser.
Yeah.
Not necessarily
yeah.
that she was a disingenuous, because sort of like you see it with Ivan, Taylor Swift's brother, who when they said, what was your first concert? And I think he said Scorpions, or was that the other one who said Scorpions?
She
Dario said that.
Her friend, Val, said, it was the Scorpions. Remember, Alexis?
And she went, right.
Yeah.
So,
but he, and then his, and then the friend says, bullshit, it was Casey and the Sunshine Band.
That's right.
And he's like, oh, that's total bullshit. You know that's bullshit. Besides, they have some good songs.
Right.
I found funny. And yeah, so again, I just kind of look at it as these were people who were young. This maybe was their first concert, and they were kind of fronting because they didn't want to admit that they were noobs.
Yeah, that's fair. I kind of felt, I thought it was a little odd that Daddario's character, Alexis, didn't know, but I also felt maybe, okay, it's supposed to be funny because she's like a newbie, you know, just got into the metal scene and doesn't know, you know, the bios. Well,
and you know, I'm not criticizing the talent involved, but these actresses were a little old for the parts they were playing, I felt.
Well, yeah.
Everybody looks young to me now, so.
Well, they're younger than us, but for people in 1980 riding around going to concerts, I don't know.
How old were they supposed to be?
Well, they didn't say that, and that's why I'm not going to make a federal case out of it. I just thought they looked, they're a little old for the part. That's all.
Right. I mean, because they could be 18. They could have been late 20s.
Yeah, we don't know.
They were, but you know, when they're mentioned, just mentioning Casey and the Sunshine Band, you know, I'm thinking that's about 1980, you know, that would have been 8 years earlier. So I'm thinking Ivan, you know, now Ivan looked like the oldest one of the group, but he just may be one of those people that's unfortunate and looks old.
Yeah, I think you're right, because Daddario is actually the oldest out of all the six. She's 34 and everybody else is in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And some people just look young. So, you know, I'm used to horror movies, and it was always one of the things I laughed at was the criticism of the Nightmare on Elm Street remake was that all the actors were in their 20s and they're supposed to be high school students, and that's like literally every slasher movie ever made.
Yeah.
Is actors in their 20s playing people in their teens. Right. I'm not saying there weren't other legitimate criticisms of the film. I just thought that was
pretty much most entertainment that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is.
So I was fine with that, and since they didn't ever specify it, I could buy that, you know, there were maybe 20-somethings.
I was just expressing an opinion.
Yeah.
Well, no, and that's fair, but, you know, like, you know, my brother's 7 years older than me, and he would have been 25 in 1988, and he was apt to go to any of those concerts as much as someone like you, Eric, who was probably, 16 at the time? So, you know, Eric, Mike does have a good point, which is we just don't know if they were 16 to 35, you know.
I'm basing everything off my life experience, which is that I had time to go to concerts when I was in my teens. I did not have time to go to concerts when I was in my 20s a lot of the time.
Oh, that's when I went to all my concerts.
Oh yeah,
mostly. Yeah,
yeah, same with me too, when I think about it. Yeah,
no, early 20s, I mean, maybe late 20s, no way.
80s and all of the 90s I was going to concerts, and then I got into the 2000s and I didn't go as much.
So speaking of Ivan, his sister Taylor Swift is playing. Was supposed to play in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Nobody cares, Phil.
This July.
Not about his word, not about her.
No, they're not, Phil. Probably
nobody
not.
Cares.
My point is that I'm 50 and I was going to go to that concert.
Well,
yeah,
you're kind
you're
of a freak.
And
you'll bring your daughters, and they probably won't.
You'll get away with it if you bring your daughters. If you don't,
yeah.
then you're going to get some looks.
But Phil, there's a good chance they won't be. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, I don't think that. Yeah,
don't probably. Make him cry.
He's going to be postponed. Yeah, but I did go see Lady Gaga a couple years ago.
Well,
so,
okay.
You know, so, I mean, I was the only heterosexual person on my row.
Yeah,
it was very interesting. Like, they were all cool people.
I might go see Gaga.
Yeah, she's all right.
Yeah, she could probably be pretty good.
Yeah, I had that when I went to see because. Idina Menzel, who was a Broadway singer and known for playing Elsa in Frozen. So, but Pam is a big Broadway fan and she plays poker from time to time with her father. So she wanted to go see her playing at the Sands, and it was basically gay people, small children, and my wife and I. And that was just really bizarre.
That's how it usually is. That's how it usually is. So, with these characters here, yeah. So I was with you, Mike. That I felt she was kind of a newbie. And then a lot of the conversation after they met the guys were, you know, should we take them home? Should we, you know, in other words, you were wondering if they're going to hook up with them or not. So a lot of the talk between the girls at that point was where there was some clues as well, whether or not are they talking about hooking up with the guys or are they talking about something else. And I didn't catch it until the kitchen scene when they were still making it sound like it was like Bev should hook up with the quote unquote cute guy, Mark. He really likes you. Or are they saying something else, which is the twist? And that's when I figured it out in that scene.
My eyebrows raised when there was already a bunch of cups set up in the center of the room.
Explain.
Well, when Bev goes in onto the kitchen, you already see like a bunch of cups already set up.
Okay. Oh, all right. So you're saying that she was already, it was already set up to do what she wanted to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was they already had pre-planned this. I mean, because this was supposed to be their first, mission. And they had, it looked like they were set up ahead of time, because they chose the location and everything like that.
Right. Well, you know what's funny is that there's a scene earlier when they're after the concert, they're out in the lobby of the show, and they're talking to the guys, and the guys say, hey, we should keep this party going. And the girls say, hold on for a second, and they go off to the side. And this really threw me off to keep me off the twist, because they're saying, oh, this will be fun, you know, and there was nothing that made it sound like there was a alternate motive at that point. And so they, even if they did have some hints, I didn't really think many of them were as blatant as you felt, Eric. What about you, Mike? What did you think? Where did you figure out there was going to be a twist, or did you just find out there was a twist?
I figured it out pretty early, I think. And it started, you know, because I said there's only three possibilities.
Yeah.
And it's either they're going to be attacked, or, you know, by from the outside, or it's going to be one of the two groups. I ruled out the guys because they were just too fucking stupid. So it had to be either girls or it had to be something from the outside. So I just figured it was going to end up being the girls, you know, that the girls were going to be the killers.
And I also think it helps, too, that the trio of actresses have more of a presence in terms of possibility of feeling like they could be the villains. Because as the other guys look like a group of doofuses in a teen movie, you know, they'd be the drunk guys who would just get all kinds of shit on a road trip or something like that. I could not possibly have seen them as the villains at all. They just didn't possess that kind of quality. And the really kind of weird, twitchy behavior of Alexis and Val kind of gave me some weird vibes prior to the reveal.
Well, and I will say this, that although I did pretty early figure out that the girls were going to be the killers, I did not figure out the twist that they were going to be part of the church staging satanic murders, get more people to attend church. And probably the reason I didn't like even consider that is because it's stupid. I mean, that's a really harebrained plot device. And I didn't like it.
So look, it is a wee bit convoluted, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'll allow it because, you know, they're trying to come up with something that is different.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I'll at least give it some credit for trying to be different.
I just, the logic center of my brain won't allow it. It's like, Christians who in theory follow the Ten Commandments are going to break one of the Ten Commandments to go more people go to church to follow the commandments. What?
Well, that's
it wasn't
also
about money. I mean, it was about money, not about actually getting them, you know. Yeah, it was to get more worshipers, but it was to get money ultimately.
Well, okay. All right. I'll give you that.
Right. Yeah, and he was brainwashing people to do what he wanted them to so he could get money.
Yeah. See, right. Now, one thing is that And I always thought the Satanic Panic was a little earlier in the 80s, but you know, I also wasn't in the Midwest, so. But one thing is one of the other things about the 80s, of course, was that there was the golden age of the televangelist.
Yep.
And while I know that the televangelists or their equivalents now are probably making gobs more money than, like, you know, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker did back in the day, they just don't have the same cultural cachet that they did back then. You know, where everybody knew them. They were constantly on the tabloid pages, and almost all of them ended up being brought down for being, you know, hypocrites and money laundering or whatever.
This is a little off topic, but I got to tell the story because my little brother, when he was about 5 years old, for some reason, I forget how it came up in conversation, but at one point my mom started trying to describe faith healers to my little brother, and he absolutely did not believe her one bit that there were people out there that acted like this. And so on that Sunday, she turned on the TV and showed him a faith healer on TV, and he was laughing so hard that he couldn't breathe. It was so funny. He was all red in the face, just laughing this big belly laugh because he could not believe what he was seeing on TV. Because faith healers are pretty crazy when you watch them. Anyway.
Could have just showed him Last Exorcist.
That just came to mind when you're talking about the televangelists in the 80s.
Yep.
Right.
So anyway, so that is another aspect of this, right? Because that was, it all was kind of part and parcel. You know, the moral majority, the televangelists, the Satanic Panic, they all kind of went together hand in hand.
Right. Right. Yeah. And also, you know, the Al Gore, Tip Gore crap with heavy metal and Dungeons and Dragons causing people
and
to
rap
suicide.
Lyrics and
rap lyrics was another one that the Gores went after. Yeah, absolutely.
And
right.
And then once the
Judas
and then
Priest was also involved with.
Yeah, Judas Priest, Ozzy Osbourne were attacked by the Gores. The rappers were. Oh yeah,
and Dee Snider testifying in front of the Senate.
That's awesome. You can find that on YouTube.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. All that stuff was all at that one time, and. Though the moral majority was and all that was considered conservative, you know, you have this Tennessee senator named Al Gore doing the same thing, and he's a Democrat. So it was just a very odd time for the whole thing because they were trying to tag the arts and games similar to what they did in the 90s and 2000s with video games. They were doing with heavy metal.
Yep.
And again now.
Dragons back then. Yeah, so Dungeons and Dragons, a paper game, and music, and then it switched to video games.
Yeah, I remember seeing a review of a supposedly played straight horror movie about a cult built around Dungeons and Dragons and shit like that. It was like during that era, they tried to release this as a scare film, you know, for young and shit like that. There were all kinds of weird, absolute things. I mean, even way back, they were doing things with marijuana and stuff like that with Reefer Madness and stuff.
That was the 60s and 70s. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you know, it's just every new era, there's something they try to target.
Yeah, there was the Tom Hanks telemovie, right? Was Mazes and Monsters, I think?
Yes, that's what it was. That's what it was, yes.
Yep.
Oh, no kidding, huh? Right. Yeah, then I know.
It would have been a very early Tom Hanks film. It was like 1980.
Yeah, 80 or 81. I can't remember exactly when.
Yeah, way back. So it was a strange thing, and so this putting this as a period piece wasn't just to get rid of cell phones. It was obviously to do all the stuff that you talked about with the televangelist and getting that as one of the big twists in this
film.
Right.
Well, it was funny because I was name dropping talking to Joe Bob Briggs. At a convention, and we were talking about Deathgasm, and I think something that we mentioned was that, and he brought up was, doesn't it feel like it should have been like set in the 1980s? You know, because there's such a big thing in that film about basically playing off the Satanic Panic and you know, paranoia about heavy metal and whatnot. And so it's hitting on similar themes here, except you don't have killer dildos and
right. And this one too, they don't have supernatural. Well, I think Deathgasm that has Supernatural.
That's what I'm saying, right. And you had the dildo fight in Deathgasm, which, of course, is the biggest to watch that film.
Sure. Yeah, and we have a recorded episode for that, but it hasn't come out yet because of I'm still working on the technical difficulties. It's still fine. It's just that there's like little gaps that I got to clean up, and that episode will be released soon enough. What do we want to talk about next? I was with you, Abe, that the guys, they didn't seem like they were threatening or bad folk at all. Obviously, they.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean,
it seemed like a bunch of guys that were like, "Yes, these chicks are hot. I can't believe they want us to go home with them."
Yeah.
Right. Oh yeah. I would have been dead. I would have been sucked right in. Because I'd be thinking, yes, I'm going
to meet
one of these hot chicks, and I'd be dead.
One of the things, I may have missed it at the beginning of the film, because I wouldn't have been really looking, but they probably didn't show it to us. What really brings them together is that while the girls are on the road, right after they leave the gas station, is that the guys drive by them in a van and throw a chocolate milkshake out the window. Right. And it hits their windshield and they have to stop and they almost get into an accident. And so when they end up in the parking lot, they throw firecrackers in their van to kind of get back at them. And at the very last shot of the film, or one of the last shots of the film, as you see the van driving away and you look at the back of the van and it has all these bumper stickers on it that are like these Jesus bumper stickers.
Oh, but that wasn't their van.
Are you sure?
It was the SUV they were driving.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say, because that would explain why they got the why they dumped the chocolate shake on their windshield.
Oh, right. No. It was basically the van they left, and they took the maroon or like dark orange SUV, and I don't know whose vehicle that was.
Wasn't that pastor's?
Must have been the father's.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking it was. It was either the father's or the mother-in-law's. I mean, the stepmother's. Yeah. So, yeah. And that was a Jeep Cherokee, that one, while the van was, I forget what that was.
Well, the guys had a van.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a Dodge van or something. And then the other thing was a Jeep. I think it was the Cherokee. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Never mind then.
Yeah. No worries. But I didn't consider them dumb. I just considered them thinking there was no threat. I mean, when you go to a concert and you meet three.
Well, the one guy was kind of dumb.
Yeah. Which one?
Kovac.
Three.
Oh, Kovac.
Yes, he was kind of an idiot.
Yeah. All right. I'll give you that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, generally, you know, you're at the concert, no one's being dinks. I mean, you know how certain people can be clicky and then they can say, fuck you, man, and all that. But none of that was going on. And so I just figured that they didn't find any threat here, even though they didn't know the girls. They just figured they were just, you know, normal people that you would meet at a bar or at a house party or whatever. And
most of the people you meet tend to be normal people. It's how that works.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. So now,
one thing I was kind of obvious along for the next three was just the survivability of who was going to probably walk away from it.
Yeah, all right. Explain it. Well, I didn't.
There was not a moment in my head where I was thinking Ivan was going to walk away at the end of the film.
Did you know that it was Taylor Swift's brother? Because he was probably financing the whole thing.
I did not know until I saw.
just saying, yeah. Like,
it was pretty obvious that it was either Mark was going to walk away or none of them were going to walk away.
Right. Well, you know what though, I was kind of surprised that when Ivan, his character or Taylor Swift's brother's character died, he was the first, and he was even before the halfway point of the film. But again, a lot of people that do produce films and they have their roles in the film, they usually aren't the star anyway. They're more apt to intentionally be a supporting actor. And so maybe that was the case. I don't know. But I was surprised.
He produced, which basically, could mean anything. This film had a shit ton of producers, which means I suspect there was probably some a lot of independent fundraising that went on.
That's true. Yeah.
Because it's one of those things. Hey, give us $500 and you got a producer credit. And he got co-producer. So
yeah, and he has a stream of money coming from his sister, who's one of the wealthiest people in the entire world. So you figure, right. I mean, she may not give him anything, but you know, if he produced the film, I don't know what that. And he actually got a co-producer, which was, you know, I mean, you get so many producers. And he happened to be one of them. So, yeah, that could have been just one of those indie film producers where anybody that gives $100, or it could have been a real producer where he gave a small chunk. Like Alexandra Daddario also is a producer to the film too, right? So she may have given some money too. I mean, she's worked with the director before, their buddies. So not the director, I'm sorry, the screenwriter. And the screenwriter, even though he didn't direct the film, he, based off of the commentary with both the director and the screenwriter, it appeared that the screenwriter was fairly well involved, even though the director was the guy that in theory puts the film together.
Well, and a lot of times, like the Kovacs and Bev were the two actors that I definitely knew going into the film, right? That are kind of recognized.
Bev, yeah, okay.
So I kind of expected them to be. Well, actually, I did not expect Kovacs to survive. I expected him to be the first one out. But so I kind of expected. I knew that Maury was going to be Mark and Bev because the way they were set up, they were both the odd men out in their groups of three. The way they just tended to be shot, they tended to get a lot more solo picks than the others. I was pretty sure that those were going to be the ones that were the were going to be the final people, or they're at least going to be the heroes of the film. But I don't remember how we ended up getting on this topic.
It was more like the expectations of the roles of the three guys, because we're talking about how the twist was feeling a lot more clear who was exactly going might be the villain.
Right. And honestly, I wasn't even sure who. I mean, I figured you were right, Mike. I figured that it would be Mark and Bev would be the survivors too if they went that way. But I also felt there was a chance that they were going to go with the baddies actually winning, you know, like to trick our expectations. But they didn't go that way, and so our expectations of thinking Mark and Bev were going to make it, assuming they didn't pull the rug from under us, we were right. So
I don't know. It didn't feel like a bad guy's going to win kind of film. The tone of the movie tended to be way too light. I mean, not Satanic Panic light, but light enough that you got the sense that there would be at least one survivor somewhere.
It started to feel at certain points feel like the moments from Mom and Dad.
Oh yeah, that film. Yeah, that was.
Mom
and Dad was a much better movie.
And I think a much darker film. They tried to suffocate a baby, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, it was certainly a lot darker in the terms of the theme. I think it was mostly how we start to kind of play pretty serious when they're tied down. And then as soon as the remaining two boys get out of their bonds, it gets more sillier, you know? The two are just yelling at each other and kind of bumbling as they're trying to get the boys out of the storage closets and running around trying to find ways in. And so it's a lot more sillier at that point from then on.
Sure. There were some other expectations that were changed because, you know, you figure who's out of the villains are going to die first. And you figured, all right, if Bev isn't a villain and Alexandra is the leader, Val was going to go first. But she didn't, really. She lasted all the way until the last 8 minutes of the film anyway.
But she was the first of the three to go.
She was. But I was thinking she was going to die earlier just for the fact that, you know, you space people out every 10 minutes or so to have a big scene. And they didn't do that. And she actually made it. Instead, what they had was the stepmother showing up and the cop showing up. And those were the deaths that were every, you know, 10 minutes instead of, you know, knocking off a character. So they had Ivango, then the stepmother, and then the cop. And then the last 12 minutes of the film, everybody just died or survived, depending on who was tagged to go or not.
Right. I like that. I like that, you know, there wasn't a steady progression of deaths. I kind of like the way the film structurally played out. And that really it was just Ivan was the first one to go. Spoiler warning. Did we ever put up a spoiler warning?
I'll throw one up earlier.
I tried to throw one out when you started spoiling things.
But I'll throw one up. I'll grab one off of YouTube and say spoiler alert, ding ding ding, or something. What do you know? So, yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I felt not having the progression of the main characters to go like we see in a regular slasher film. That was good that they didn't go that route, and especially since I like the characters, I like the villains and the victims as much, and I liked them throughout the film. So I was glad that Val and Kovacs, you know, made it all the way to the last 8 minutes of the film rather than being knocked off earlier like Ivan's character, you know.
I'd actually kind of say I liked the now maybe they did CGI with it, but I really liked the makeup on. I took note of that, of when they killed Ivan. And the reason
that was pretty cool
because
that was actually practical effects.
Yeah, because
director's commentary talked about it. But go on.
Good, I'm glad, because the way it works is he's sitting there naked in a chair, or at least his was he completely naked? Yeah, because the guys are putting their pants on later.
They had pants on. They had their underpants and socks on, I think.
All right, so they got so regardless, the main thing is that his torso is exposed.
Right.
And the reason that matters is that he gets stabbed in the chest.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at him full front on and the blood coming out of this, you know, a gaping knife wound in his chest. And it's a fairly clean shot. So they did a great job of masking whatever they were using to pump the blood into the wound.
Yeah, it was a complete. What the director and the writer said in the commentary was that they had a full,
full body prosthesis, or
not the full body, but just around the neck and upper torso. So, okay. And they somehow merged it in there to make it look like it was part of his rest of his body, and so when she stabbed him, that was a real stab. You know, I mean, you know, obviously they used probably a fake knife to do it, but that was a real shot. It wasn't any computer graphics at all. And then the blood gushing out, you're right, it was just pumped through something. And
I've seen people do that before on films with a probably a higher budget and do it in ways that were much less convincing.
Yeah, I gotta agree on that one.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing too is the director and writer said the whole film was shot in 16 days, which is kind of cool. And then they were talking about the lobby scene at the concert. Originally, they were going to do it out in the parking lot again, but the director said that Roger Corman's book about filmmaking said never do the same shot twice because it looks like you're just going back to the same shot. So they decided to do it. They were going to do it somewhere else, and then it started raining, and so they instead did it in the lobby, and that's why they had that scene. And then when they were putting a prosthetic on Austin Swift, they did the scenes of the other two kids. Because if you see those scenes, they are not all in full picture. So they're just focusing on Kovac, or they're just focusing on Mark. And while they're doing that, the makeup people are putting the thing on Austin's character, which is kind of cool. And then what else? Another thing that was interesting, that they don't mention Austin Swift as Taylor Swift's brother once in the entire commentary, which was I thought was kind of interesting, as if they were trying to not let people know about it.
Almost like he was embarrassed by it.
I don't know about that.
Well, he's probably sick of people talking about her.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, it's like Joe Hill, you know, don't talk, just talk about me, not my father.
Right.
Same type of thing.
Nicolas Cage and, you know, the Coppolas.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage, yeah, Coppolas and all that stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Same thing. So the fact, another thing that was cool about Austin's character too, when he dies, Ivan's character, is when they keep on going back into the room a couple of times, they do have the huge puddle of blood underneath the body while he's sitting in the chair. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good thing, because a lot of times films, they forget to do these little details. And here they says, what would happen after you stab someone in an artery and the blood starts gushing out? Oh, you would have the huge puddle of blood, not just a small puddle of blood or blood on their torso, but the huge puddle of blood on the ground. And they did that. So I thought that was good. They did a lot of good detail, you know, really paying attention to detail on setting up the sets, I felt. Let's see. So basically that's when the whole movie really goes to crazy, is when Ivan dies, because we find out that it's real. And the expression on Val's face when it happens is awesome, because she's like, holy shit, this is awesome. But she was like, holy shit, we're actually going through with it. I can't believe it. And so I thought that was cool too. That was good detail. All right. So what else do we want to talk about? Barrett, where did you want to go from here? What did you think of, everything? This is where Bev has her breakdown, I guess, and that's why they leave.
Yeah. She leaves because she knows what's coming and doesn't want to be involved, I think, is why she starts wandering away. And meanwhile, they're getting the drinks so they can put the guys out. And they bring those to them, and then the guys go out and they wake up tied to chairs.
Right.
Which was where I was like, oh, okay, this movie's going in a different direction for me. I really thought the threat would be like an outside threat, not in, you know, one of either of the groups. So that kind of surprised me.
Right.
That's where we hit the first twist.
Right. That's the first twist. And then after they kill Ivan, Bev pulls them out of the room. And at first I thought she wasn't on board, but then they go to the bathroom to talk. And she says, I wanted to kill them next. Give me the knife. And so you think she's on board.
No, I wasn't buying it for a second.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I wasn't either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that point. Yeah. Oh, the best scene, part of that scene, though, was Val was taking a leak at the house. It was hilarious. they keep on running the joke. So, of course, when they go back, the two of the guys escape, but they can't escape quick enough, and they lock themselves in the storage room, as you said, Abe. And then it was kind of like a standoff of the girls trying to get into the storage room and the guys trying to figure out how they can get out of the storage room and escape. Unfortunately, Kovac's character is already
wounded. He got sliced. Yeah, he got sliced as they were running away.
Yeah. So
Pretty bad, too.
Yeah. So his artery in his arm is cut open, so he's not doing good. And then, of course, the girls don't have the time that they thought, because Val's stepmom or ex-stepmom shows up out of nowhere because she came to get her passport.
Yeah,
because
she's divorcing the pastor.
Yeah. And she wanted to get some coke, we find out, too.
But she leaves some of the money, which I'm surprised at. She just takes cocaine in her passport.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about these scenes now. The cop and the stepmom.
I'll say that there were two moments in the movie that made me laugh. One was when the guys are running away to the storage room, and the one guy grabs a cookie sheet off the counter and slams one of the girls in the face. That made me laugh. And the second moment that made me laugh is when Alexander Daddario is having a confrontation with the sheriff outside, and he's trying to get her to to put her hands on the car. It's like, put your hands on your car. And she's like, I know my rights. I'm not going to do it. And he goes, no, let's do it. Put your hands on the car. And then there's a pause. And she just, like, runs away.
Yeah.
and he's like, hey, wait, no. That cracked me up, too.
They could have used some Benny Hill music right about then.
Right.
Little yakky sax.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, so so the mother-in-law, or stepmother, stepmother walks into the conservatory and sees the satanic symbols and the dead body of Ivan, and she freaks out. And so Alexis kills her, but we find out even before that, the stepmom had called the 911 to say that it appears there's squatters in the house, because the house was, again, a summer house, even though it's a mansion. It's like the quote-unquote summer house for wealthy people. And so they weren't expecting anybody to be there. The girls would be in there to do their deed to the guys. And the stepmom, when she went there to just get her passport, she wasn't expecting to see cars in the driveway, so she called 911. So a cop is on its way. And so everything's going bad for the girls. What should have been an easy pickings is turned into a disaster, basically. And then Bev obviously isn't necessarily on board either.
Yeah, that causes the most problems at first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the cookie sheet was awesome, Eric. That was great. And then Daddario's character has like this nice black and blue mark on the top of her forehead.
Yeah,
right.
Which the stepmom mentions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, and that was great too, because the stepmom says, "What happened?" Well, we went to we're dressed like this because, you know, they're dressed like heavy metalers, and she's supposed to be this clean cut girl. We went to a costume party, and then there was a fight, and someone threw something, and it hit me in the head. And then she says, she talks about, well, I told you shouldn't be going to these parties there, you know, because she's still like one of those Bible thumpers. It's kind of funny, even though she's divorced and she's a cokehead. But so be it. All right. So where do we want to go next? Abe, what do you think? What do you got?
So now we have the cop and the mother, stepmother bumped off. Bev decides, after discovering the truth about the pastor, who is instead using the money to expand, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but the girls will initially believe he's using it to build like shelters and stuff like that, but he's using it to just pretty much rack in more cash for himself. And she grabs a power tool and goes to confront them. And at the same time,
that was more than a power tool. That was a motor from a boat.
Yeah, that was a boat motor.
Okay, so it was a boat motor, which was a nice little change up from the chainsaw or anything like that. And she goes to confront them. At the same time, the boys are getting ready to make a last stand because they had been, you know, bug sprayed and, you know, they had fire blown at them. And so they've got to have these bottles broken and ready to charge in. And Bev confronts Val and Alexis and tries to tell them the truth of what's going on, but they don't believe her at all. And because of that, it's, you know, Alexis thinks that Bev is just confused and she doesn't understand what she's talking about. And then all hell breaks loose when the boys come at the same time. You know, Bev managed to get a good few blows in with the boat motor blade. But accidentally gets stopped from finishing them off when Kovacs mistakes her for still being on the side and stabs him in the back with the bottle. And everybody's just running around scattering throughout the house. And so at this point, they are, now it's basically a game of cat and mouse where Alexis has the keys to the vehicle. And they now need it if they want to get away and bring Kovacs to the hospital. So they give Kovacs the gun to stay put while they try to figure things out. Heaven is a Place of Earth is being played in the background from a radio.
And, oh yeah, Belinda Carlisle. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the same thing, at the very moment, the pastor himself pulls in.
Yep. Right, right, and that sets up the final part of the film. So, Mike, what did you think of this? Now, you said you had some issues with the film, but it wasn't this part, right? It was the final shot, or what?
No, it's much later in the film where I take an issue with it. You know, well, again, I kind of saw this coming at some point that the pastor was involved. I didn't know if they were actually going to literally bring him in, but why not? The party keeps growing, right? More people keep crashing. and I always kind of like that, the caper that what could possibly go wrong, and what always tends to go wrong is other people. I'm sure Eric would appreciate that. But, yeah, I mean, I think that was okay. You know, but he kind of comes in. He's, I think some of the acting and maybe some of the writing here gets very over the top, because it starts to really televise where it's going to go, because he's so broadcasting to the audience at one point what his plans for his daughter are. And his daughter, who is Alexis, has been, you know, not completely stupid the entire film, suddenly develops a really bad brain tumor.
Yeah, and maybe it was the hit on the head.
And it's like, yeah, when she got hit in the face with a cookie sheet, you know, she just never quite was the same. Maybe it was some of the vapor she was inhaling from the bug spray. Yeah. Right, because he's like, well, I knew we were going to have to sacrifice somebody. That's why I picked you for this. Uh-huh. you know, but it was serviceable. It kind of breaks down the nice symmetry we had of the guys and the girls. You start getting some confusion as to who's on what side when the guys get out of the pantry. Yeah, because the gun is in play now because they killed the cop.
Which was a great scene, by the way.
And they took the cop's gun.
She wasn't like the one acting like the crazy person, and she just shoots that cop in the head.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, Val was like just a faller, and then out of the blue she kills the cop because
I love how Alexis behaves like she was a cop, like dropping the souffle.
What did you do that for?
Exactly.
Well, what else? I mean, because clearly their cover was blown. I don't see what the problem is. You just threw a few extra bodies in the mix.
Right. You also killed your mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law stumbled, called the cops. The mother-in-law stumbles in, right? So the mother-in-law stumbles in. She gets killed. The cop follows up. He gets killed there. And the rest of the plan kind of works as follows. But, you know, clearly, this was not their masterstroke, right? Because clearly, Daddy was the one who came up with this plan, as mentioned earlier. Do we find out why the father came back? Not that it really matters, because we know the mother came back for her passport and mostly her coke.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
I think he was just coming home.
Yeah, but there.
Oh, he was supposed to come home and discover it and report it to the police. And
okay.
Yeah, that was his plan. Oh. So that it would take notice off of him as being a possible suspect.
Right, right, right. Right, but he's pissed because his daughter fucked the whole thing up because his ex-wife is killed and there's a police officer killed.
The sheriff himself.
Yeah, yeah. Dead. Yeah, you're right. Exactly, sheriff. And so it's like, yeah, the whole plan is effed up, and yeah, that's not good. Yeah, so he's pissed, and so he's gonna. I don't know if I saw that coming, that he was gonna sell out his daughter. I thought he was gonna try to fix it, but
he was pissed because it was Alexa's idea to have Bev on in the group for this killing because you know she was sure that she was ready to do so. And because Bev turned to, you know, turn on them and send everything tits up, it ruined everything. So, you know, as the pastor said, you know, she was Alexis was careless and reckless with her plan.
Right. What'd we call you when you're a little girl? Reckless Alexis. You know, it says, he does say, I knew we were going to have to sacrifice somebody for this.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's the reason I chose you for this. He's kind of just right. saying, we chose you to be the sacrifice.
Right.
I do like how the pastor's walking through the house, seeing the mess, and he's throwing out a. He looks at his ex wife and goes, "Oh, good riddance." And then he walks into the kitchen, sees the sheriff, grabs a beer, and eats and takes a cookie from the jar. And he's just kind of like thinking it through. It's just more that little dark humor as we're going along. Is you know our main characters are fighting in several different locations. You know, you got Bev versus Val and Alexis versus Mark. It's a little moments there. I understand I felt that the pastor was more of a plot device than the character. You know, he was
because there's one point where he's not even like around and all sorts of stuff is happening, but you know he's in the house. So what is he doing?
Yeah, that's right. That was when he was in the drinking his beer and eating his cookie.
But he had to hear all that stuff going on.
Right, because Val and Bev are fighting in the basement, and Mark and Alexis are fighting up in the bedroom, and he's on the first floor while the other two fights are on the opposite floors, below him and above him. So all that stuff is happening while he's just, like as you said, Abe, thinking about trying to figure out what he's going to do. And he already shot Kovacs, right? So, and whatnot. So, yeah, and I guess that's when he finally goes upstairs and he confronts his daughter and his daughter's telling him, oh, Val's downstairs taking care of Bev who backstabbed us. But what happens is Bev takes out Val. Sets her hair on fire.
Because of the hairspray.
Yeah, because of the hairspray, right. Yeah. And then comes upstairs and shoots the pastor and throws Alexis out the window. And so they're able to walk out of there after taking them out.
He doesn't know. Ben doesn't shoot the pastor. He knocks him out with the butt of the boat motor.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, the pastor had the gun and he shoots Mark.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And then, like an idiot, he throws the gun aside.
Right. Yeah, right. Because they haven't recovered Bev yet.
Well, it might have been out of bullets. They had fired quite a few.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. I didn't keep count, so I'll get
shot again later.
Oh, you're right.
Oh yeah, all right. Yeah, because I remember Val, right? She shot like
four shots. Yeah, she used one of the sheriff as well, and then the pastor used one of Kovacs. So if it was like a typical pistol magazine, it would have had like two or three more bullets in it.
Right, well, at that point, I'm not sure. I mean, clips like that, you know, you can have up to 18 bullets.
Right.
So I have to assume, since they weren't making it an issue, that they had plenty.
Yeah.
Because they never came close to 18. So first of all, not carrying the gun with him baffled me. So there was one little bit of plot stupidity that kind of irritated me.
Val ended up being the smarter one.
Oh, yeah. Val was easily the smartest one of the bunch. It's just that she got wiped out because of her hair that had too much hairspray in it.
Which was a nice 80s joke. And
yes.
Yeah,
my wife laughed, you know, because my wife being a girl in the 80s where we were guys in the 80s or thoughts in our parents' heads in the 80s, you know, my wife laughed when Val took the bottle of Aquanet out of the purse, out of her bag, because, she, you know, she could remember that those days. I remember being in high school and having these girls just walking past you and just a cloud of hairspray.
Shoot, us. Right. Some of us guys used Aquanet back then when we actually had hair.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing. Well, you know, I mean, I didn't want to pick on you for being bald now. You know, I mean, I still use hair gel now because if I don't, my hair curls up like crazy. So, you know, all Aquanet is a brand from that time, you know, of, you know, yep. Like Schultz, you know, I mean, so, yeah.
So the idea that they use it as a way to kill her, I thought was funny. The fire effects were a little floaty. You know, that was like the one spot where I think the budget couldn't quite live up to what they wanted. But since they generally frown upon setting in actresses here on fire in real life, you know, for anything short of a Pepsi ad.
But from the 1980s, by the way.
Yes, 1980s, that, Michael Jackson.
That was horrible.
It was.
That was worse than the hairspray joke.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was good, Mike. Yeah, that was good.
So anyhow, so that was just a nice callback, a nice gag that they had set up earlier. Chekhov's Aquanet.
Right, right. Yeah.
I don't know why I still laugh when you make those jokes, but I do. Chekhov's Aquanet.
That's great. That's great.
Well, it's better than Green Inferno and Chekhov's female genital mutilation.
Or Cannibals of the Munchies.
It's just, you know, what's funny though too is that a lot of people, I bet, may have not had that go right over their heads that her hair got on fire because of the awkwardness.
The hairspray. Yeah.
Yeah, they could have just thought it was because the hair goes on fire anyway. I don't know. But yeah.
I think that has to do completely with the age of the viewer. If you were alive in the 80s, you get it.
Yeah, exactly. And Mike is right. You know, you in high school, girls will be spraying their hair right in the middle of the hallway. You know, so he's absolutely right.
Oh, they didn't have to be spraying
dude, you would have to hold your breath when you walk past the girls' room.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, right.
They just had so much that you couldn't help just being near it. You could breathe it in when they weren't spraying it because it just lingered.
Right, that's true, and this is girls that had fairly more timeless hair in this film. While a lot of the girls back in the '80s had the big puffs, you know. I mean,
oh yeah, they had the lion mane.
Yeah, the lion mane, exactly, and so you needed that hairspray. So
God,
that
was... I missed the '80s.
Jeez,
I want to hang with a lion.
Right. What was it? In our area, Revere Beach, some beach north of Boston. There used to be like a seawall, and the girls would just be all sitting on the seawall, smoking their cigarettes, whatever, and with the huge puffs. You know, it was just hilarious. It's like timeless memories. Crazy.
Yeah. Hey, was anybody actually smoking in this film?
Yeah, wasn't Vale?
Okay.
Oh yeah, Vale was. Yeah, because she lit the cigarette. Actually, it was funny. The commentary, the writer and director are talking about when Vale takes a squat on the side of the road to take a piss, and then goes to the middle of the highway and lights her cigarette, bending over. They said that when they did,
I was waiting for her to get hit by a car.
Exactly. That's what they said. They said they did the review audience for the film to, you know, to get people's opinion of the film and all that. And one of the things people said, they thought there was going to be a Val being squashed by a bus or something at that
point. Was the feeling I was getting right there too.
Well, except, you know, it was in the Midwest and you have right. A pretty good line of sight on a straight road. You have to be really stupid to get run over by a thing.
Right.
Yeah, well, she hadn't inspired us with confidence at that point.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed how that last kill came, because it was just, you know, it was just kind of this really awkward zoom-in shot with a stock scream. I don't know. I did kind of like the aftermath of this overly long trail of, you know, as he was of blood. But I don't know. I thought it was kind of a weak ending for the villain.
Oh, you mean when she got run over?
Yeah. It was this really awkward final shot for her. It was just, you know, this weird zoom in and then this stock screen they have. Not even really the actress screen. It was just some kind of, you know, almost like that stock screen they use in almost every horror movie.
The Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So the film was supposed to take place in Indiana. is what they said. That was interesting too, because I thought they were going to go to credit right there, but they didn't. And I think this is what you're talking about. You had a problem. Oh, you too, Barrett, or just you, Mike, that had a problem with this?
I did have a problem with the ending a little bit, yeah, but Mike can go first.
Yeah, so you see Mark. The father shoots Mark in the back.
Yeah, so he has a pretty bad wound, obviously.
In theory, he thinks he's going to die, and then he just kind of walks out the door like there's nothing wrong with him. And that's problem number one. Like, it's the most magical healing of a wound I've seen since Prometheus. And then at the end, right, so she runs over Alexis, and you get the shot of the blood and the hair all matted and sticking to the front of the car. I'm like, that's just, the idea is that they're going to go away, and they're just, because she's going to treat the bullet wound with apparently some Band-Aids. And some peroxide she gets at the convenience store, at the gas station,
they did have some Jägermeister in the vehicle.
Yeah. Oh, well, that fixes
everything.
Now that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's what I didn't like, was the damage that was done to the car with hair and blood hanging off of it, and they're driving out in broad daylight with that.
Right,
yeah,
and
they hit a fox.
That was clearly human hair.
It was a human head, too.
Yeah.
The size of the hole. In the grill.
And the cops have lighters so they can check for Aquanet.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Bev wasn't that bright.
No, I know. I know. Right? But it's, I'm just saying that it wasn't a deal breaker in the film. Right. It felt like it just got sloppier than the film had been up till that point.
Right.
They've been really good with the wounds. You know, they didn't generally have, you know, when you look at Kovacs, you know, he didn't die right away from being slashed in the arm. Even when he got gut shot, you know, he still survived and dragged himself in the house, and then he died. You know, so they kind of
But he really acted wounded the entire time. It wasn't like,
yeah, he did.
Yeah, like my, well, that's believable. If you don't, you know, just give your daughter a knife, have her cut you, and then see how you feel about it afterwards. So you know, they, and then, you know, just the idea that just the way he kind of shrugs it off. I don't know if they reshot the ending, or if he wasn't originally shot with the gun and they'd done a reshoot where he was. Because it doesn't quite fit, you know. Because you get shot in the back, it's going to take more than Band-Aids and you know, some hydrogen peroxide.
What they should have done was, after they saw the news report in the convenience / gas station, where the pastor makes up this whole story about how he came home and his daughter's dead and his ex-wife is dead and the policeman's dead and all, and my people of my parish are dead, and I was wounded, you know, whatever. They should have had her say to Mark, all right, now let's go to the police, or something like that. Because then you say, okay, that makes sense, because now he's going to get hospital attention. We don't have to worry about the hair on the grill of the car, because they're going to the cops to explain what happened. But they don't do that. Making it look like they're going to go out into the wilderness and they're going to let the pastor get away with it.
And especially now, they could have done something in the news report, because we see the pastor talking to the cops, where, you know, the cops are on the lookout for Bev, because he clearly knows who Bev is. And so the idea that he said would frame her for this makes perfect sense, and that would give them a reason not to go to the police.
Right, that would have been another way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, so there's ways to tidy up the ending. The very, very ending, we're talking like the last 2 minutes of the movie, just felt sloppier than the rest of
them. There was a lot of loose ends. There was definitely a lot of that.
Right. Yeah, and it makes sense that they could have reshot that ending, you know? I mean, because like you said, it doesn't fit with the rest of the film, and the writing of that piece is weaker than the rest of the film, because like you said, they could have had either the pastor say that Bev's did all of this, and so they're on the run, and so they're not going to go to the cops. Or what I said, which is Bev says, all right, let's go to the cops and say what really happened. And they didn't. So it's like, yeah, it was almost like it's tacked on. That's a good point, Mike. I didn't even think of that.
And the rest of the film, I think, was smarter than this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's, you know, the most brilliant film ever, but it was fairly tight.
Right.
You know,
the
plot logic, given that you're dealing with a bunch of 20 somethings, you know, it more or less holds up outside the one premise, which is that they have an absolutely ludicrous scheme to bring people to Jesus.
Right. Yeah. No, and that's absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah. So, it's really only that last 2 minutes. Was that basically what you felt too, Barrett?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt about it. It's just the ending could have been better. And sure. I just didn't like driving away in this vehicle that's got blood and hair hanging from the front.
A big hole where her head was.
Yeah, exactly. That just bothered me.
So it may have been better if they'd just gone to black when they had the Wilhelm scream, maybe.
Yeah, I would have been fine with that.
Or, you know, honestly, I felt her death from through the window was a little more climactic versus that kind of awkward cut. It could have easily been like them just driving away and then just slowly fade out.
That would have been even better. Yeah, that's a good one, too.
They could have even ended it in the actual gas station. I'd have been okay with that right there, you know, after she says, don't believe everything you see. It could have just went to black then. That would have been fine with me, too. But
yeah.
And I would have been perfectly happy to have Mark die. Because he did get shot in the back.
Yeah, same here. I actually thought when he did get shot that he was done. But they decided to have him make it. It would have been better just to have Bev walk out of there, too. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, sometimes I get tired of the sole survivor movies, too, so I'm okay with somebody else living as well, but...
Right. Well, right.
Don't shoot him in the back.
Right, exactly. Don't shoot him in the back, yeah.
Right, or have him get shot in the back, but start acting like Kovac's character, you know, where he's on his deathbed, basically.
Right.
Yeah. So that's fair, yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up specific to the film, scenes, characters, plot points, whatever that we haven't talked about that was on the list that you're going to bring up we just haven't?
Well, Eric, as an avowed metalhead, how did you feel about the authenticity of the metal conversation in the film?
It was legit.
It was fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to listen to all that type of music when I was in that. I used to listen to, you know, all that hair metal crap as much as I listened to.
I was bummed that they didn't end up using like the music they were talking about, but I understand that would have been way out of their budget.
Oh, you mean like when they were driving and they said, "Hey, want to turn on the generic rock station?"
Right. Well,
actually get to hear some Ozzy and some Scorpions and some Judas Priest, that would have been great.
Or Metallica, or yeah.
Yeah, and but you, that's you a only very got, like, expensive a minute movie or two. You're talking about at that point.
But
yeah,
they did get Heaven is a Place on Earth.
Yeah, the commentary talked about that a bit. For example, they wanted to have one of the characters have an Iron Maiden shirt. They wanted, I think it was Alexa, to have an Iron Maiden thing on her back of her jacket, and they couldn't get the rights from Iron Maiden. But they did get Anthrax, and so there was, as you saw, there was a bunch of people at the concert that were walking in and out with Anthrax shirts.
They just did a tour in that town like last week.
Right. Well, and you know what's funny is that's the thing is that, you know, these things like Coca-Cola and all these things that you see, you know, just a rock concert T-shirt, you know, you could just take your camera out at Disneyland and start filming people and they're going to have that stuff. But you can't just use that type of stuff in films. You actually literally have to get permission.
Not anymore. You used to be able to.
Yeah. And if you watch, like, you know, any behind-the-scenes stuff or documentaries, if there's somebody in the background wearing a Coca-Cola shirt or somebody in the back, you know, they're pixelated out.
You know, right.
And that's any kind of thing that might be construed as product placement.
Yeah.
Nope, that's a no-go.
Right. Yeah, I know. I forget what film it was, but I think it was maybe World War Z, they had a soda, Coca-Cola or Pepsi.
Oh, that made me so mad.
Yeah, and they couldn't get the rights to it, so they had the CGI and change what we saw as something else. It was kind of weird.
Well, the most famous one is probably Twister.
Okay.
Did you ever see the movie Twister?
Long time ago.
I don't remember it.
So at the end of the film, they need to like plot the vortex of the volcano, not the volcano, of the tornado. And so they build these use soda cans with like little devices in them that will get picked up and swirl. And so they gather up all the soda cans in the town, and every soda can in the town is a Pepsi product.
Wow.
But originally they were like, they had, it was Coke products, but they couldn't get the endorsement deal from Coke. So they went back and they CGI'd, and this is like 1997 or something like that. So, or maybe 2000, somewhere around there. So we're not even talking about great CGI. They had to go back and CGI every can, you know, so 7-Up had to become Sprite. Coke had to become Pepsi. That's a fairly famous one.
Too funny. Yeah. And that was what happened here, is that they couldn't get the rights. So obviously, yeah, they couldn't get, like you said, Eric, the real music, because they couldn't get the rights. But they did get Belinda Carlisle. So that's true. Yeah.
And I think for something like that, they could have just, I'm sure, gotten in something that was an authentic indie rock band, a metal band.
Well, they did. They did. That is actually a real rock band. It was like they filmed it, even though it was supposed to be Indiana, they filmed it in Manitoba. And some band from like Winnipeg, a local heavy metal band from Winnipeg, Manitoba, they got to do the show.
Oh, that explains why it was weak, because that was totally some Canadian rock.
Yeah, so the band was actually legit. It's just that it was right, that's true. It was just a local band that did covers, basically, and they asked him to, you know, they looked the part, so they said, hey, you guys want to do
okay.
And so that's where they got it. Yeah, because I don't think they ever mentioned the name of the band, the concert, right? They never say, yeah, I can't wait to see whatever the band is. They just say...
No, I don't think they do.
Yeah, and I think that was intentional because they didn't want to use some fake name, so they just... But you know what? They didn't have to. All they had to do was say that it was, you know, I mean, there was a lot of smaller bands that people would go see. Even today they do.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, so, you know, and it wasn't like the venue they were going to was like, you know, a friggin' football stadium. It
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's all small stuff. Yeah. But they should have had Anthrax. That would have been awesome because they did get the right to the shirt, so they may have been able to get the right to the music. I don't know. Who knows? But you know what? You don't want to fly in the band because that's an extra $20,000 to fly them in. Feed them, put them in first class hotel rooms, and all that other stuff, especially as an independent or small production. Anything else anybody want to bring up that we missed or that you wanted to bring up that we haven't brought up yet? Anything? All right, very well. All right, so we'll get into, we still have a little time, what we've been watching or any news. Eric, why don't you start? You got any genre stuff that you wanted to let folks know about that may be interesting that
you want to... Oh, let me pull up my letterbox because I've been watching so much shit I can't even remember. Funny thing when you're stuck in the house.
Yeah, what else could you do during quarantine?
Let's see here. Since last week, what have I watched? Nothing new. All rewatches. Just I rewatched Alien and Aliens.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Which are both still excellent movies.
Did you watch them on like a 4K or anything like that?
Oh yeah, I got the 4K version.
Excellent.
They have 4K for Aliens? I thought it was just Alien.
Yeah. Digitally.
Oh, okay.
Okay, excellent. All right, yeah, so the disc...
Actually, I'm not sure if it's 4K or if it's just HD, but it looks fine, whatever it is.
Right. But Alien is 4K. I know they came out with that, yeah. All right, sounds good. Anything that you want to bring up, Barrett, that you've seen recently, the genre-related? I know you've been watching some of Ozark, right?
I have been watching some of Ozark, and I am enjoying it. I've only gotten about 3 episodes in right now, but I'm going to try and watch a little bit of that this weekend. I watched a movie, a Corman film, that I had never seen before called Lords of the Deep. It came out in 89, and it was not great.
Lords of the Deep. Is that like a fish monster movie, right?
Kind of. It's an alien movie, really, when you get down to it. But it's, you know, it's not real well done as far as the graphics and everything.
Not as good as the alien movie I watched.
Put it this way, the main actor is Priscilla Barnes. So,
well, she's hot.
Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about as far as acting ability. So,
and was it called
can't distinguish between the two.
Yeah, I know. He has a hard time with that.
Well, you know.
Yes, it's. I think you're thinking of Humanoids from the Deep, which was another Roger Corman film from
yes!
the early 80s. About yes! Which was the first draft of Shape of Water about fish people who come on land to have sex with people.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I got that. I upgraded
it was
that.
What it was about, Eric, I swear to God.
I believe you. I'm just...
What's funny about Humanoids from the Deep, my parents never had like cable or anything when I was growing up. And I went to stay at a friend's house one night for a sleepover, and that movie came on and we watched it late at night, like at midnight. So I saw that when I was pretty young. It was great at that age.
It was fun. Yeah. You know, there's a lot. I watched that and is it Forbidden World was the,
that's
the
a good one too.
Alien ripoff that he did around that time. And, you know, they're not great films, but they are fun films.
Right.
I will give Corman a lot of credit for being able to take a shitty film with a shitty budget, bad actors, bad effects.
I don't know. They were bad actors.
A lot of them weren't great actors. They're kind of more B-ish, maybe even lesser.
Yeah, there's a reason why a lot of them never went on to much, and still turned out to something that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, even this Lords of the Deep was fairly fun. It just wasn't a great movie. Let's put it that way.
Sure. You know what? The movie I thought you were talking about was Up from the Depths, and that may not even be a common film.
Okay, I think that's Abe's key right there. Yeah. Abe, you just said it. You said the key words.
Well, I didn't catch that. What did you say?
Up from the Depths.
30 stories high. Breathe in fire, he stands in the sky. Godzilla.
And Godzilla.
Oh, God, what was it about that everything? I mean, we have to have a cute cartoon character in every 80s cartoon to hold the kid's interest. Apparently being a cartoon about a giant monster will not in any way be enough.
I know! He was the worst part of the whole fucking thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so, Godzuki was annoying.
Yeah, he was the Scrappy-Doo of the
show.
Like
Scrappy-Doo, yeah, exactly.
He certainly was.
Oh, Scrappy-Doo. Scrappy-Doo. Yeah. That kind of ruined it. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of the Scooby-Doos because my kids like it. I got them into it. And fortunately, they don't have these aren't the Scrappy ones. So
I like how on the one hand he pretends that he's only watching because his kids are making him do it. At the same time, he does drop that he's the one that got them into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. I want to get them into. Well, first of all, the Scooby Doo is awesome. I have no.
Yes, it is. I have no.
Watching it, to be honest. But the real reason is because I want them to get into geek stuff and monster stuff as well as the stuff they like anyway. Because I like taking them to conventions and stuff. So getting them into Scooby Doo, they get to see monsters that aren't threatening and they won't have nightmares. So,
and again, if you're talking Scooby-Doo, anyone who has not seen it really needs to see the Scooby Natural episode of Supernatural.
Season
13 or 14.
Yep.
As Sam and Dean get trapped in a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Zoinks! Yep. Jinkies! Son of a bitch!
Yeah, maybe don't share it with really young kids.
All right. Even though that's regular television, but yeah, that's fair. What about you, Barrett? Anything else?
That was pretty much it. I finished The Stand.
Yeah.
Because we're rereading that because we're going to do episode on that.
Yeah. So I'm on page 700 at the moment. Oh, we're doing the extended version. The one with the kid. You got to have the kid.
Gotta have. Well,
apparently
kid.
Not because they didn't.
Don't tell me. I'll tell you. That happy crappy stuff, man. Happy crappy.
Yeah.
Don't tell me. I'll tell you. That's the best line ever. He says it like 12 times. Yeah. Well, you're right, Mike. That's fair. But that was before he was a superstar, where he basically could make any.
Had to listen to his editor. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he released it with all the original stuff in it, and actually it's good. It's good stuff that was cut. So it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Back before he was writing 1,300 paid novels about a guy with writer's block for the fourth time.
You might have a point.
That is funny, Mike. That is funny. Yeah, that's a problem with a lot of writers is
they write about writing.
Yeah, I can't stand that. It's like, okay, don't you understand that most of the people that are reading your books are something else?
Yeah, like clerks, exactly.
Accountants or programmers. Or
well, anything. It's write what you know. And Stephen King's career was a high school English teacher to superstar novelist. So,
yeah.
You know, there's not a whole lot of, I have no idea what odd jobs he had when he was in high school.
Right.
But
yeah. Well, I mean, you could just say he's a character's an engineer and accountant. Yeah, I mean, no one really focuses.
Yeah, but then you have to research on that.
I was going to say, then you have to research it.
Right. That's true. That's true.
And you said he used a Phillips head. Nobody would ever use a Phillips head for that. Are you crazy? Yeah, you get that kind of feedback from your quote-unquote fans.
Right, yeah. Like George Romero did with YouTube and all that, when he put all that in that last movie, that one of his last movies.
Diary of the Dead?
Yeah, and it was
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that was terrible. All right, what about you, Mike? Anything that you wanted to bring up that you've seen recently that is genre-related that folks may be interested in?
Well, I've mentioned this, I think, previously. I know I'm way behind on my games. I've been playing Witcher 3 extensively. It's one of those games that takes, you know, several hundred hours to complete, where, you know, your character can't step more than 5 feet without somebody else jumping in front of his face and saying, "I have a quest for thee!" So that's really where most of my free time has been going. I get an hour or two a day with my wife when we're not independently distance teaching, and we just finished up the final season of Legion, which is
not thorough. Finished that yet.
Oh my God. You know, I will say what you will about spin-offs, sequels, prequels, whatever. You know, when you look at things like Legion and Westworld and Fargo, you know, these are series that are spin-offs of movies or other TV series, and they're still some of the best stuff on the air. And Legion is a very, very loose spin-off of the X-Men. In fact, Charles Xavier is a big player in the last season, but unless you pay attention, you don't even notice it's him, because they never refer to him by his full name. But it is one of the most visually creative things I've ever seen on TV. And the plot does hold together. You kind of have to pay attention, because most of the film is about telepaths and takes place in like the astral plane. So it has reasons for it to be a little weird and trippy. And then to make it even more weird and trippy for the third season and final season, they add in time travel, which makes it even more weird and trippy.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard to follow, kind of like the first season of Westworld was, a little bit.
But it does kind of make sense, and I really highly recommend it to anyone who has a remote interest in it. It is by the same guy who made the Fargo TV series, and I guess it's still making it. There is a fourth season in the pipeline somewhere. I just don't know when they're going to get around to it.
Well, and Legion has some really good acting, I have to say.
I think the
actors are just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the whole series is top notch.
Yep.
It's 30 episodes total. You can watch it all on Hulu. It aired on the FX network originally. It's just really, really inventive and creative.
right. Anything else, Mike?
I think that's about it. I've been basically gaming instead of watching anything.
Is the game Witcher 3, is that a newer game? How, when did that come out?
I think it came out 2017, 2016.
And that's for Xbox, you're using it?
I'm doing it for Xbox, but I'm pretty sure it's one of those made for every console.
Yeah, pretty much anywhere, yeah. All right, very good. So it must be pretty good since you're doing that a lot. All right, sounds good.
But it's huge, like, you know, a Fallout or something like that.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, Fallout's a huge.
Or
yeah.
Skyrim, you know. Right.
Yeah. Far Cry 5, best game ever. Let's see. Yeah, for me, I rewatched some episodes of the Ozark season. It's best show ever. Great. And then I got into because of Barrett. I got back into Diablo, and so I had that. I'm doing the season 20, I think it is now. So yeah. Done
on
that.
Xbox?
No, I'm doing it on the laptop actually, but you can get it pretty cheap on the Xbox if I wanted to get a copy there too. Do you do it on Xbox, Ark?
I do.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good game. So yeah. Oh, I did. Eric. then I'm reading The Stand again, and then I'm reading Whisper in the Dark again, and that's pretty much it. I haven't been watching much TV really because I've been doing a lot of reading at nights, podcasting, or watching or playing Diablo. So not much programming. So that's it for me. What about you, Abe? Anything you wanted to bring up?
I've been doing a lot of my writing right currently. Haven't been watching too much. I've been playing recently Persona 5, The Royal, which is basically a complete edition with extra storylines added to the vanilla game. It's a very long game. It's huge in terms of play time. One reviewer said they got 130 hours out of it.
Which game is this again?
Persona 5 The Royal.
Okay, yeah.
It's an RPG where you have to fight the corrupted systems of the Japanese underground and government by infiltrating them. Basically, a parallel world that exists alongside it. It's really a great game. It's very stylish, it's a lot of fun, and you'll get a lot out of it. It's been playing that and doing my writing to try and pass the time. But mostly just trying to keep busy.
All right, very well. Anything else, Abe, or is that it?
That's it for me.
All right, sounds good. So before we get into our final thoughts of the film, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It is a general interest podcast called The Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
All right, excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric do a podcast right now, another podcast?
Yes, we do the Westworld podcast, Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, which we're recording weekly. We just finished episode 5 of season 3. Episode 6 out of 8 airs on Sunday, which is just a couple of days from now. And so then we've really got about 3 episodes left before this ends and we bring back Cinema a la Carte.
Yep, exactly. And Abe, me, you, and Barrett, and Kevin Letts are doing a book episode near the end of the month?
Yes. Yep. So, folks, stay tuned for that one because we will be examining Whisper in the Dark, one of Lovecraft's short stories. We've actually done some other stories in the past. We've done 2 Stephen King novels and one of the other Lovecraft's tale. So if you want to take a listen to those and stay tuned for the release of this next episode, please do. You'll find it alongside the other Dark Discussions episodes.
Yep, absolutely. And me and you, Barrett, we're doing a episode coming up. Anybody on this podcast is welcome to join us. But I mean, the book is humongous. That's the reason why I didn't ask anybody. But except I knew you would want to do it, Barrett. What are we going to be doing? Talking about sometime in May.
We will be talking about the extended version of The Stand by Stephen King.
Talking about it, you're living it.
That you have a good point. I felt that way the whole way through the book.
I actually read the extended version of that came out when I was in high school, junior year. And get this, I had the book with me and I would carry it around with me. And one day I went into English class. All right. And I had the book sitting on my desk and my teacher was passing out a handout and he handed me mine, looked at the book and went, huh, hope it's worth it.
Well, I'm going to guess this would have been the 80s and therefore it was a Stephen King book. And so that he would have been, if you were an English teacher, you probably were an English snob, a literature snob.
Probably.
You know, and he was at, you know, his peak then.
Right.
You know, it was popular, couldn't possibly be good. You know, not like Shakespeare or Dickens.
Exactly.
right, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Come to think of it, I think what he was handing me was an excerpt of Moby Dick.
No surprise there.
That's a good book. That's an awesome book. But yeah, that's too funny. So, if Eric, you want to join us to do that episode, just start reading, rereading.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that again.
Well, you got to, I guess, maybe March, May 10th, maybe we'll say. We'll just throw that out. So if you really want to do it.
I also have a job still, so I want to keep that job, so.
Right. Well, yeah, I've only read it at night myself, but
and three podcasts.
So I do the podcast and I do that at night, but yeah, I don't get to watch much television right now because I'm just reading. So you only get so much time. All right,
especially in a pandemic.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, like Eric, we're still sitting in front of the computer all day until whenever. So.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, I kind of admit I do kind of like this working from home thing.
I love it.
I can't stand it.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I love it. It's the best.
I'm so much more productive when I'm
in the office.
I've
been doing it for 10 years, so.
Yeah, me too. I've been doing
it's
it.
Kind of like no different.
Oh, I am not nearly as productive, but at the same time, I have office hours from 12 to 2 where I can do live chat with the students, but then the students never do it, so I just sit next to my computer and play video games. And occasionally have to hit pause when one or two students actually has a question.
Right. Oh, yeah. Eric, yeah. So, yeah, me and Barrett work together. That's how we know each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we've been do the all the SQL and all that crap. And then the thing is that, yep, work from home, save gas and all that other stuff. And very productive. Me and Barrett are very productive working from home. Right, Barrett? You've got to back me up on this, right?
Oh, yeah. I am way more productive than when I go into the office and people start talking to me and
leave me alone.
And they're not even talking about work-related things.
Right.
So,
I don't talk to anybody in the office. But when I'm in the office, I feel like I'm working. When I'm at home, I don't feel like I'm working.
You got to change that attitude.
One of the things I find odd is that I have students – and this may just be because I'm not a morning person. I'm a night owl. You know, I have students who are like getting work done that I never, ever would have expected to do anything when they were allowed to do it on their own. and some of them are just, and I did a survey, I asked, and like so a number of them did say things like, I like being able to work when I want to work. You know, stuff like that. It's interesting. It's interesting some of the things that we're finding.
Well, my problem is I never want to work.
Well,
if I'm in the office, there's not really much else to do. So
for me, it's like I'll work at any time of the day. Like I'll come up with a solution to something at 9 p.m. I'll just roll upstairs and fix whatever I need to fix or, you know, but that's my job lends that, you know, I can do that very easily.
Yeah,
being a programmer. So
I'm in the category of essential workers, but my boss wanted to keep most of us safe because of the peak coming in. For the virus, but we'll be going back the first week of May, and but we'll have to do some changes in terms of you know, masks and stuff just for the long run, because this is not going to go away anytime soon.
Mm-mm. Right. All right, so let's give our final thoughts in this film here that we just discussed. We summon the darkness. We're going whatever order. I think I started last time, so at the beginning. So I'll start. Yeah, this film is fantastic. A lot of fun. I had a blast. Completely entertained. Loved the flashbacks of the 80s, which was kind of cool. And it was really real. It didn't feel like, you know, it was fake 1988. It felt real. I loved the characters. They were great. The acting was solid. The script was pretty solid. Everything was great about this film. I mean, it was just a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So I give it a big thumbs up, and a high recommend. And it will be easily... I haven't seen enough films yet, but there's a good chance that it could easily make my top 10 best horror films of 2020. Let's go to you, Eric.
This movie exists. Do what you want.
All right, very well. Barrett.
where can I go from there?
Probably somewhere between those two extremes.
Probably. So I have to say, after this discussion, I liked the parts that I liked more, and I disliked the parts I disliked more. But in general, I like the film more now after we've discussed it than I did going into this. It's a fun movie. It's not great. The acting's good. There are some things that aren't, you know, particularly appealing about the plot, but all in all, it's a fun movie and worth watching once at least. So that's my feeling about the movie.
All right. Mike.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine film. I don't think it was a great film. I thought it was decent. If you're looking for something new to watch, this is a film. I will not go anywhere near where Phil is in terms of its magnificence. Because I think it's a relatively forgettable film, but it's still decent and it's an enjoyable watch. I think it's a little bit better than Eric gives it credit for.
All right, very well. And don't forget, they had some three hot chicks, dude.
There you go.
Oh, Jesus.
And a relative of Taylor Swift.
That's right. That's exactly another good point. You're right. Yeah, so it's right there. Two pluses right there. All right, Abe, what do you got?
It's a mixed bag. It does some things pretty well. I thought the performances were strong, and there's some good kills and just some good dark humor. But the writing can be up and down. I think it can lose its momentum towards the end, as you heard from our thoughts on the climax and the last few minutes. You can honestly do worse in terms of the type of films to choose to watch while trying to, you know, self-quarantine. But, yeah, it's there. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's a film you got to rush to go see, because there's others that are set during this time period that do things a lot better. But you honestly aren't losing if you watch it either. The choice is up to you. So if you want to check it out, go ahead.
All right, very well. So that's, once again, 2020's release of We Summon the Darkness came out April 10th. Available anywhere VOD is. You can actually rent it for under $7, and you can actually purchase it for under $10 with like extras, you know, so a direct commentary and a 20-minute featurette. The film, I don't know about disc, but either way, it's still readily available as a VOD anyway. Starring once again Alexandra Daddario, Maddie Hassan, and Amy Forsyth, along with Logan Miller, Keenan Johnson, and Austin Swift. Check it out if you want. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us talk about We Summon the Darkness. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.